Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. This is not the X-Files. We are not scientists. We are not mathematicians. We are certainly not school teachers. We are no experts. We are paranormal investigators who have come together to give our audience insight and educational subjects about the paranormal field. Join us live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Without further delay, here are your hosts, Matthew J. Haas, and his partner in crime, Tim Vickers.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another exciting episode of Paranormal Talk Radio. As always, I am your co-host, Matthew J. Haas, and always with me, my partner in crime, Mr. Tim Vickers. How you doing, Tim?
Very well, sir. How are you?
All right. Glad to be back this week. We're finally getting some nice weather for once. It's slowly getting warmer, but there's still quite a chill in the air in the morning and at night. I'm still wearing a jacket, and my heat is still kicking on. My electric bill is, like, screaming.
Your wallet's screaming.
Yeah. May's here. Happy May to everybody. Warm weather's around the corner. Everything's blooming and blossoming. So it's my favorite time of the year, but not for my allergies. We got an exciting episode tonight. We have a really great guest. She's a great lady, good author of House of Darkness, House of Light. We've had her on our show before. Tim, you weren't on the air that night, but we had Chip Reckenfell helping us out with our interview that we had with Andrea Perrone. She's one of the eldest daughters that lived in a very haunted house. And the Warrens did an investigation at our house. And it pretty much inspired the movie The Conjuring. And, she's kind of like going out there telling her side of the story, because we all know how Hollywood kind of embellishes things. And
I don't believe it.
And they don't believe it. They don't always tell the right side of the story.
Hollywood?
You know?
Come on, man.
But, she's more like talking about, you know, a lot of the things that they couldn't put in the movie, you know, things like that. She's got 3 volumes. I will put the link in the chat room for everybody. And I'll also put it on Facebook so everybody can check out her website. And she's been in the chat room. If anybody would like to come join in the chat room, she's there. And, come hang out with us for a little while in the chat. If you have a question, come and ask her a question. What's going on in the paranormal world, Tim?
Oh, everything.
Everything?
I know we want to do a lot about UFOs, and this month for UFO month, but I want to say, kicking it off, I haven't seen a lot of reports about it. Saw a few links, went and read about it, but something really exciting from NASA is the new drive that they are testing. I don't know if it's true, so like I said, I don't have any links to post up. Just been reading about it, about the non-fuel drive. It's cannot quote it, sorry. Based on an electromagnetic repulsion, I believe is what it is, but it really approaches speeds much closer to the speed of light than, or it has the potential to, than what we've known about.
Warp drive, Donnie.
Warp drive, that's what it, yeah, that's getting close to warp drive speed. And that, I think, is an amazing advancement. It has me really excited. Unfortunately, I will probably not be around to see any benefits from it. But I love seeing the science of it. I love seeing the potential of it and the excitement around it. And, you know, if we're out there zipping around in space at warp speed, surely we'll find somebody, right?
Hell yeah.
Heck yeah.
We can explore those, you know, exoplanets that, you know, that are that they're finding out there that are similar to Earth. You know, there could be,
yeah,
you know, signs of life there because they're, you know, almost resemble, you know, the exact, you know, planet Earth. And why not?
Yeah, and I have to say, now the warp drive is fantastic, but I would really appreciate it if they would make greater advancements in teleportation before warp drive, and that would be great. Want to go to Italy today? No problem. We just teleport there. Go to the beach? No problem.
Yeah. Like, instead of, like, traveling on an airplane to, like, Japan, you know, that's going to be, like, 13-hour, 20-hour flight, you know, mix it down and cut it down to two.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll just scramble our atoms and reassemble them somewhere else. Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, so, yeah, that's pretty cool. I hope they go somewhere with it. I don't know, but it could be dangerous, too.
Oh, yeah, well, there's, you know, if it's not dangerous, it's not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so, and the other thing, I don't know if anybody follows me on Facebook, but I got a little bit of a rant this week. You know, me and Tim are just, you know, we're trying to put the basics back into investigations, and, you know, we started this show because we're pretty much investigators that are trying to do things the right way and, you know, steer people in the right way. And, you know, any chance that I get to educate somebody, if I get that opportunity to give a good education about the paranormal or, you know, coming from our experience, you know, we're not experts, but, you know, that's what this show is about. You know, I'm trying to give insight to you guys and, you know, tell you where you can learn properly from and just kind of guide you. You know, we're here to just give our audience guidance. But I'm really saddened, Tim, the news I got, you know, a couple days in a row, actually, from potential clients that we were trying to, you know, get an investigation in Jersey. And I got the news that they no longer will be participating in paranormal research because a lot of the local groups or, you know, local investigators, I'm not really certain about, you know, all the details of the story, but they seem pretty upset about, you know, how they got burned or the reputation they got damaged. But, you know, they're no longer participating in this kind of research. And it bothers me because I feel like, not that they do it intentionally, but I feel like they associate, like, other teams with them because maybe they think, like, we're all alike somehow, but we're not. You know, there are more professionals, you know, and there are more experienced people out there. And, but anyway, yes, so these people ruined the reputation of this museum. And, you know, they were pretty upset about, you know, what had happened because you could just tell in the email. You know, like I said, I don't have many details about it. But, and then I got another location, which is pretty much the same thing, but they, you know, they vandalized the place and, you know,
oh, that's terrible.
Damaged, you know, the location. And I don't know if it had anything to do with investigators or, you know, who specifically, but I'm just sitting here shaking my head. And here I am, you know, working my butt off and trying to build a really good reputation in the field and in the community, which I have so far. And I hope to remain that way. And I am professional, and we are hardworking, and we're not like these people whatsoever. So I'm hoping they're actually listening to my show somehow. And, you know, if I could, like, go in there and, like, fix the wrong and, like, correct the wrong and, like, do damage control, I will. Like, you know, I'll go in there and I'll do right by them and, you know, just let them know, like, you know, we're not like that. You know, we're there to help them, and we're here to educate, you know, those people. You know, mm-hmm. You know, that's what we're about. We're not about vandalizing and destroying places, you know. It freaking pisses me off.
Well, I kind of think along the lines You know, several of us have talked about this before, and that's just the saturation of the market. And, you know, I think at the beginning of it, when there were locations that were opened up for public ghost hunting, and of course, you know, a lot of places use it for fund drives, fundraising, to help obtain funds to fix up places. I mean, that's fine. But I think the saturation of it is, it's more carnivalistic. Is that a word? You know, it's more about the ride and not the respect.
Yeah.
If you know, there's not a lot of appreciation when you go into a historic place, or it doesn't even have to be a historic place. If you go into someone's home, I think I hate to use the market, you know, the avenues, the venues, are so common, are so washed out now, that I think you're beginning to see a lot of places where they feel disrespected. You know, there's not a lot of respect going into the place. One, for the facility itself, for the history of the facility, for the people that used to live or work in the facility, and for the owners or the residents of the facility. And, you know, when you talk to me about that historic location, and I don't know it, and it's okay, you know, I know it's confidential, but, you know, that's the first thing that came to my mind is, you know, I'm sure that they've probably opened their doors to allow this to happen, and I've decided to shut their doors, kind of getting tired of it. And the vandalism thing is just beyond me. I think that's a definite sign of utmost disrespect, you know, to a place. And above and beyond, whether there's ghosts or demons or spirits there, you know, that's still someone's facility. That's still someone's house. That's still a person's belonging. That's still an extension of that person. And to do harm to that place, or to, you know, consciously, you know, mar or disfigure something, is I think, just a direct reflection on that person's value of actually being there, which is zero.
Yeah. You know, I kind of wrote back to these people and I said, you know, if I could, like, you know, do some kind of damage control and, you know, just, like, erase the wrong they did and, you know, do right by them and come in and clean up and, you know, let's see what we can, you know, try to work out to see if I can, you know, help them out, you know, better than what the other people did, because, you know, obviously they're inexperienced. They don't know how to handle their clients. You know, they did things in an unprofessional manner. And like I always say to him, you know, even though this is a global phenomena, our paranormal community is a smaller world. And, you know, depending on where you are, you know, word gets around fast. We'll find out sooner or later, like, who's doing what.
Yeah, and no matter what the place is, people find out. Where that place is, you know, of course, once someone goes somewhere, it's on everybody's Facebook. And, you know, the sizzle reels come out and, you know, you dove in the awesome, scary music and the cuts and, you know, people getting scared. Well, everybody sees that and it looks fun. It looks exciting. And everybody wants to go to that place. And I think, again, I think it's more of a carnival ride for some people than it is you know, a place to go that you approach with a certain level of dignity and respect to the people.
Yeah, a place to research, you know, a place to kind of like become your lab, you know.
Well, I wish I had a lab.
You know, like one place that I mentioned to you quite a few times, you know, like one night I couldn't be on the show because I had an investigation on a Friday. And it's a client that I've been working with for a long time, and we kind of consider it like our laboratory in a way. Because, you know, they keep letting us come back every year. And, you know, the reason that is not just, not only do we love going back there, but, you know, it's a beautiful location and it's got a great history to it. But they have new experiences every year because they're constantly renovating. And to do the type of research to, like, you know, compare to, like, the things that we've gotten over the years versus what we get recently, you know, is it the cause because of the renovations? You know, like, we're trying to, like, really break down the cause and effect, you know, in a kind of way. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I kind of feel, and I don't know, but I kind of, it doesn't shock me that places are closing their doors, and I'm sure not all of them will, and I'm sure that there are plenty of places that earn a lot of income and revenue, and you know, they adjust the best they can to the clientele that they have coming in. However, it doesn't shock me that some places are beginning to close their doors, and you know, all the respect to them. You know, it's their facility. They can close their doors. They can allow who can come in and who can't, you know, all they want. You know, it's no problem with me.
Yeah.
You know, but I, just like you, as far as the community goes, it's really bad, you know, for us that people are, you know, doing things like that to damage the reputation of the community as a whole.
Yeah. It just, like I said, it just, you know, I guess because I'm so passionate about like what I do and I love what I do, and it just kind of strikes a nerve a little bit because we are hardworking, and you know, I'm trying to work my butt off, you know, out there and try to go things about it the right way. And you know, when I hear things like that, it just upsets me, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it should.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, I wrote to them and I told them, you know, exactly that, you know, and if I could do anything to help them, then, you know, let's see what we can work out. But if not, you know, it's a shame. But, you know, time to move on, and that's it.
Time to move on.
That's it, man. So, once again, for those who are joining us late or joining us now on the show, we have a really great guest, amazing lady, great author of House of Light, House of Darkness, House of Light. She's got 3 volumes, volume 1, 2, and 3. I'm going to put the link here in the chat where you can check out her book and her bio. Her parents bought this farmhouse and turned out to be very haunted. The Warrens investigated it. They pretty much investigated everything around here. But, you know, it inspired the movie The Conjuring. I watched the movie. I thought it was actually a really good movie, even though they left out, you know, a lot of experiences that she had. But maybe, you know, there could be a lot of reasons for that. You know, it could be personal. You know, it could be stuff that they didn't want to put on the movie. But, you know, that's why she's going around, and that's why she is getting involved in the paranormal community. She wants her side of the story to be told. And we had her on once before, and we just really reached the only tip of the iceberg on what she really wanted to, you know, say on our interview. You know, we only have so much time to share on air, so we couldn't really talk about what we really wanted to talk about. So we offered, you know, for a chance for her to come back, and she accepted, and I'm glad to have her. She's a great person. You know, I talked to her on the side here and there, and great personality. And, you know, I love their show, too. They, you know, she has another radio show that she helps host with George Lopez, Dead Air Paranormal, I believe, Tim, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I listened to one of his episodes. Really good show. You know, they're really pretty much similar to our show. You know, they talk a lot of paranormal common sense kind of things. And but I love George's background. He's got a military background himself, and he's been in it for a lot of years, and he does investigations, and it's a lot like us, and good guy. What do you think of his show?
Yeah, I listened to it when Melanie was on it, when they were talking about the issue that was pretty popular. The issue.
Everybody knows the issue.
The issue, yeah. And, of course, Melanie's military, and from what I know of her, very good person, you know, sounds very honorable. And worthy of a lot of respect. And, you know, they talked about, you know, stolen valor, as it were.
Yep.
And it was a good show. It was handled. And I think, like you said, George had also served, if I'm remembering correctly, and I think I am.
Quite a few years, actually. Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. And they talked about the emotional impact, you know, of the act of doing that. You know, people, you know, I guess I'm beating a dead horse. I don't want to go down that road, or else I'll be on that road for a while.
Yeah,
but you understand, you know, people earn. Yeah, I need to stop. But people earn those. You know, people earn with blood those medals and those honors, and for someone just to stitch it on a shirt is very disrespectful.
Yeah, no, it shook the community. It really did.
It was good, you know, and it should have. I'm glad it did.
Yeah. There's another thing I did want to bring up real quick. Our good friend Mary Lou, who's a great colleague and friend that we met over at Panama Warehouse. I've worked with her quite a few times. We've helped each other out with some cases. And she's out in California, but she, you know, also had a little rant, you know, of her own, which was similar to mine, but she has a big group out in California, but in her region, California is a huge state, so I can't imagine how many paranormal groups are over there.
Mm.
But you know, she said that there's actually a group, you know, that's got a good hold of a historic location, and they're really kind of ruining their reputation, their historic reputation, because they're faking evidence, and it's clear that the evidence that they're presenting in public is not typically something that you would call paranormal. You know, they're showing a lot of photographs of your basic orbs and dust and, you know, this and that. And, you know, they're just kind of like, I think, boasting about their stuff rather than, like, appreciating what they actually have in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it gets under her skin because, you know, she's a lot like us. You know, she's hardworking and she's trying to build a good reputation in California. And, you know, here she is, like, running her own group now, and she runs into problems like that also. But, you know, I wasn't running into people faking stuff. I was running into people that were vandalizing properties. But, you know, she's running into people that are faking things and kind of ruining the reputation of people around in her area. You know, so I can't imagine how that would make someone feel, like, if I found out somebody was faking in my area, and then, you know, it's going to rub off on us. You know, even though we have nothing to do with them. But a lot of these places, like I said earlier, like, once again, even though we have nothing to do with them, but they associate us because we're in the same field.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it diffuses into everybody, right? It disseminates all the way down. It's, you know, one drop, and, you know, you might not be able to see it, but it's there. It contaminates, and it just, you know, it flows through everything. Hopefully, you know, that ship will right. But, you know, to me, I really see it as a pendulum swing. You know, it was very popular, very top of the world for a little while, and now, you know, the pendulum's kind of swinging, and it's the way it'll be. I think the saturation of the field, you know, things will swing down. And I think what you'll have left, though, is people that take it very seriously. And when the excitement's gone and when there's no more, Lord have mercy, when there's no more TV shows about ghosts and ghost hunting, you'll be left with people that take it more seriously and have a much more earnest into the information that they can gather.
Yep. And that's kind of why, like, I've been itching to kind of get back into lecturing and getting back out into the community, because I haven't done that in a while. It's been a few years, but I used to do it quite a bit in my younger years.
In your younger years?
In my younger years.
You're still a pup.
But I kind of did this, you know, breaking out of high school. So I started in the late 90s, and so I've been out there quite a while. Next year marks my 18th year, actually. I can't believe it's almost 18 years. but I don't know. I hate when you lose your train of thought. Damn it.
It's not because of age, but it's, you know, it's youthful exuberance. You have so many thoughts in your mind at the same time. You let go of one to get a hold of another one. You lost them both.
Yeah.
It couldn't be old age.
No. So, I've been itching to get back into speaking and being at events. And like I said, I love to educate about the paranormal whenever I can. You know, when it's affordable, we don't make a living doing this. It comes out of our own pocket. So, of course, you know, whenever I get the chance, I can, I'll do it. But, you know, I used to love doing it at libraries. You know, I've been to conventions and conferences, and, you know, I've been to Virginia, Maryland. I've been to West Virginia, Tim, believe it or not.
But, wow.
Yeah, Harper's Ferry, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm sure you're very familiar with. So that's actually where we almost got killed.
Well, welcome to West Virginia.
I don't know if I ever told our audience this story, but this is our first time to Harpers Ferry or West Virginia at all. And we were doing an event, and it was actually at a campground, and they have some buildings that, you know, they rented there on the grounds. And, you know, so we figured we'd, you know, enjoy the campground and try camping for the night. But little did we know there was a freaking thunderstorm coming that night. And, man, let me tell you, you know, you're up in the mountains, and when you're up in the mountains and there's a thunderstorm, there's like a thunderstorm like you've never seen. I mean,
real close to it.
Yeah. I mean, lightning bolts were like crashing all around us, you know, right next to us. My wife is like holding on to me like really tight. She's like crying and scared. And I'm like, I'm just like laying there with her, like hoping like we can make it through the night. But, yeah, that was our first experience in West Virginia. And actually, that wasn't the first time we actually almost got killed, but there was actually a second time. My friend that was with us, and we were in his truck, and I'm in the back seat, and everyone else is in the front seat, because it's like one of those, you know, like smaller cabs in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in the back, and my wife is, I don't remember actually, no, my wife was in the front with my friend, and my friend's mother was in the back with me. And the GPS actually almost took us over a cliff. It was like, this cliff came out of nowhere, and I couldn't believe the GPS was telling them to go down this road and that road, and then all of a sudden there was a cliff. And we were like, I'm like white as a ghost, no pun intended. And,
hey.
And I'm like, my hands are like holding the ceiling, and my wife is like getting ready to jump out of the car. She's like, you know, has her hand on the handle of the door. And, yeah, needless to say, it was quite an experience in West Virginia, Tim.
Well, good. I hope you tried some pepperoni roll, you know, because, you know, pepperoni rolls, it's the food of West Virginia. So, you know, if something else doesn't kill you, high cholesterol will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It's probably why, you know, I have some, but I can't. Man, they're so good.
So, in a couple of minutes, we're going to get Andrea Perrone on and let her know and give her the okay to call in. I'm really excited to do our interview part two. Like I said, we had her on before. But I'm excited. Did you ever see the movie Tim the Conjuring?
No, I didn't.
No, huh? A lot of people didn't because they just, you know, they preferred to read her books and kind of like get her own experiences rather than watching the movie. You know, I know Chip Reichenfeld did that. You know, he just rather not watch the movie and just get it from, you know, I guess the horse's mouth rather than, you know, Hollywood's version. But, you know, which is cool. You know, that's respectful in a way. And I don't know. But she, I'm sure, will be glad to, you know, tell us, you know, what she didn't tell us last time, and we'll get right into it, I'm sure. And on the other thing I want to announce to our audience is it's UFO month. Here on Paranormal Talk Radio. Throughout the month of May, we're going to talk about UFOlogy, ETs and space and astrology and anything to do with outer space.
Well, I hope I will try to find. I saw that link on a Physics World site, and I just thought that was really exciting. You know, maybe a couple generations away, but approaching, as they say, warp speed in the technology that we can have is great, a great advancement. Like, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, aliens are going to come and visit us, but, you know, if we have the capability to zip around, you know, our little corner of the universe, it sure helps the odds or the probability. I think. Of course, there's going to be a lot of crashing, but I would definitely do it.
Hell yeah. I can't wait for that warp drive. Beam me up, Scotty.
And you know somebody here is going to try to put it on a car. You know that, right?
Oh, of course.
It'll probably be someone in West Virginia.
Yeah, right?
Hey, y'all, watch this, right?
Yeah. The South scares me a little bit.
Oh, it's good. We're actually very north. there's a lot of us that's farther north than we are south. But
speaking of which, it's funny you said that because one of my teammates that we work with, a good friend of mine, you know, it's funny because we were I forget where we were, Maryland, and we were investigating a plantation down in Maryland by Chesapeake Bay, and you know, like my friend is like, I totally feel the north south vibe thing. He's like, wasn't this over years ago?
Yeah, we say Washington versus Lee. You know, that was settled a long time ago.
Yeah.
The case of Washington versus Lee. It's over. Let it go.
Exactly. But I don't know. It was funny because he's like, you know, we're going to like this local deli and we're going in to get some lunch and like we're just kind of like creeping around quietly and like Brian's like, do you like feel like a bunch of eyes watching you?
I think it's not Washington, excuse me, Grant versus Lee. I misspoke my historical reference.
Uh-oh, time to go to school.
It's time to get a drink.
Oh, boy. All right. So we're going to get Andrea in. So if she's listening, she could go ahead and call in. So without further delay, I welcome Miss Andrea Perrone, and I'm real excited to have her tonight. She wrote the books House of Darkness, House of Light, Volume 1, 2, and 3. I stuck the link in the chat, and you know, you guys can access her books there. You know, from everybody's reviews, it's great books from her side of the story about the house she grew up in that was haunted. She's the eldest daughter, and I don't know. I'm sure we're going to have lots of questions for her.
Yes.
So
it's really exciting. It's very exciting.
Yeah. But I don't know.
Are we waiting? Are you calling her in?
No, she's going to call us.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So just waiting on her. She said give her a minute. So no problem.
No problem.
I'm patient.
We're patient. That's what we are.
Yeah.
Yes. Paranormal investigators are anything, if not patient.
Yeah, right?
Hours and hours of sitting with a recorder.
I don't want, but if
and a flashlight.
Honestly, if I'm watching a video, I don't want to see hours and hours of sitting. I want to see people investigating.
Yeah.
So
hey, if you're here, turn on that flashlight.
Yeah. All right. So without further delay, everybody, here is Andrea Perrone.
Hi.
Hello, Andrea. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing really good. We're excited to have you on board again tonight. Thank you again.
My pleasure.
Yeah. You know, we had you on before, and you know, we only have so much time on the air. As you know, you guys have your own show, and you've been on a lot of shows, and you know, there's only so much time you can, you know, cram in there and, you know, get as much as you want to talk about, but you know, we kind of only reached the tip of the iceberg, you know, with where we were going on our show when we had you on. And, you know, I was real delighted to, you know, like how far we got into that. And, you know, it was real exciting. And, you know, so it's a real pleasure to kind of like continue where we left off. And then, of course, you know, your love for UFOlogy and, you know, of course, it's UFO month on Paranormal Talk Radio all month long in May. And, but, you know, welcome back to our show.
Thank you. I'm truly happy to be here. And I'll tell you, this is a very, very important, I would have to describe it as a pivotal time in the course of human history right now. And you know, every day I get up and say, you know, I'm so glad I'm here for this. I'm so grateful to have any part to play in getting the word out, you know, whether it be my lectures or radio shows that I do, television that I do. You know, this is this is something that is truly important to me. And the reason that it is because it's important to all of mankind. You know, we have an absolutely beautiful planet that we are systematically destroying. And there are those, our galactic brothers and sisters, who are very, very well aware of what's going on this planet. And for the last 70 years, there's documentation of visitation that has been withheld from the general public. Now, my partner in the paranormal, George Lopez, will be the first one to stand up and say, if there is global disclosure, it will create havoc, that there will be a total social breakdown, there will be mass suicides, religious systems will fracture, people will feel hopeless, everything that they've ever believed in will suddenly change, and that it will not be a good thing for humanity. And I, not to be argumentative, although I do love to argue with George, it's so much fun, but I should always win, but I mostly always win.
I just want to tell you how much, you know, your show is really good, and, you know, I back George, you know, 100%. I love, you know, his approach. And, you know, I hope you can personally tell them, you know, one day that, you know, I much respect to you guys.
Thank you. We love doing the show. We do. And, you know, we don't take opposing sides of any issue just to, you know, play good cop, bad cop. We don't do that. That's not, you know, we don't play any games. And that's what I think people respond to about A World Awakening, that it really is authentic, that whatever you're hearing is how people feel. There's nothing scripted about it. You know, George pays out of his own pocket to keep that network, Dead Air Paranormal Radio, up and running year in and year out. He's into year 8 now. And we started at the beginning of his 7th year. So, you know, we've been at this for about a year and a half, and it seems like we just began. We've had some incredible guests on. We've had people who are very scholars, I guess, truly investigators, scholars, people who are, you know, we've had Rosemary Ellen Guiley on. We've had Johnny Zaffis on a number of times, Ken DaCosta and Keith Johnson, and we've had the head what do you call her? She's the head witch of, she has this, a group of 9 covens in New York State, Lady Morgana Avalon, who is a walking encyclopedia on witchcraft. I mean, we've just really gone into every different realm of the paranormal that we can reach into. The only thing that I refuse to bring up as a topic on A World Awakening is cryptozoology. I just absolutely not. George can do that all he wants on any of his other shows, but you know, I'm just so not convinced that what people are reporting actually exists. And if it does, it is more than likely just another race, just another extraterrestrial race that zaps in and zaps out as they please. I just don't, I just can't believe that there's, you know, colonies of these things living in the mountains of North Georgia. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What do you think, you know, we were talking a little bit about it in the chat room with NASA kind of being more heavily involved in the search for extraterrestrial, and now there are more independent companies out there also in the search, and I definitely think it'll be exposed, you know, at some level. But like you said, I think maybe they're slowly doing it on purpose because they are afraid of, you know, like world chaos and, you know, religion breakdown. And, you know, do you think that could be why?
I think that NASA is deeply, deeply entrenched in every aspect of the search for extraterrestrial life. And I don't think that we really need to search very far because they're already right here. They're already among us. And there are 57 documented races that have routinely visited this Earth, according to the former Defense Minister of Canada, Paul Hellyer. I do not question his credentials. I do not question his research. This man has put everything he ever worked for, his entire life, on the line to tell the truth. And I know him, and I know his heart. And this is, you know, there's nothing made up about this. That's why I put the link into the video that I've been running on my page every day, every other day, because that's part of disclosure. Part of disclosure is desensitizing the planet to the idea of extraterrestrials. And that's been going on for decades and decades, predominantly in film and television series. You know, we all remember the incredible fascination that we all had growing up with Lost in Space, The Outer Limits, Twilight Zone. I mean, these are all mind... Gene Roddenberry, brilliant. Steven Spielberg, brilliant. But not just brilliant, they had access to information that they imparted deliberately. Paul Hellyer said that many, many people, and I'm one of them, were deeply affected by Close Encounters of the Third Kind, compelled to watch it over and over again. I went to the theater to see it when I was 17 years old with my two best friends and had such an emotional reaction to that film. They thought I had gone off the precipice. They were quite sure, because at the end of the film, as the tall white entity came out of the ship and she opened her arms, I had a come to mama moment. I couldn't explain it. There was nothing I could do to explain it. The tears were pouring down my face. Everything made sense to me all of a sudden. Everything made sense. And it wasn't, I was 17. And I didn't find out until I was 55. According to Paul Hellyer, virtually every aspect of that film is accurate except where the exchange took place. It didn't happen at Devil's Tower, Wyoming. It happened at an Air Force facility 93 miles northwest of Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, anybody know what facility that might be called?
Area 151?
Yeah, sort of kind of like that, yeah. You know, this was all real. I mean, he went so far as to say that John F. Kennedy paid with his life because he wanted to film this event and disseminate that film footage around the world. And the powers that be would not allow that to happen. Now, this is a man who is the former Defense Minister of Canada, consolidated the armed forces of Canada, worked very closely with the United States during his career, and has unprecedented access, has and had unprecedented access to insulated information that he has now in his 90s, starting when he was 89, started imparting, and he's 91, and he's telling the truth in every venue he can, in every place that he can, and I consider him a great hero, and I consider Jaime Masson a great hero. I had the pleasure and the good fortune of meeting him in Nevada last November when I lectured at the Starworks Symposium put on by Paula Harris. It was a fantastic symposium. It was just unbelievable how many learned people were there, and in front of an audience of 300, and now I guess more than 100,000 people have watched my filmed interview from that, from not my interview, my lecture from Nevada. And that's how I feel like I'm doing my little part, you know, just reaching some people, and maybe they'll share the link and reach out to someone else that they know that's interested in this. And that way information is disseminated. We the experiencers, we the contactees, are the point of disclosure, because our cowardly government simply will not relinquish what it perceives to be its own power by telling the truth to its citizens.
Cool. Yeah, that's pretty deep. But I totally can relate to what you're saying, because I always tell, you know, my colleagues, like, you know, I want to get back into lecturing and speaking at events, and I'm going to be speaking at a really big event in the near future. I can't announce, you know, when it's going to be or where it's going to be yet, but, you know, like, we all have this, like, calling on, like, what we want to do, and we all have this, like, feeling about being connected to, like, you know, that purpose or, like you said, you know, what you're attracted to, like, when you were watching the movie and you just, like, had that instant connection, some, you know, for some reason. And but I always tell my friends and colleagues, I'm like, you know, even though I'm a small fish in a big pond, but, you know, I feel like I can still participate and, you know, make some kind of contribution, you know?
Yes, and we all have to, you know, put our egos aside, put, you know, any fear of condemnation aside. You know, my mother, my poor mother, she said to me, my mother has always, always wanted me to run for federal office. She thinks that I'm just what Congress needs to shake them at the roots and make some viable change in our government. And I've been trying to explain to her for years that my interests are not in geopolitics. My interests are in exopolitics, and that I can serve a much greater purpose being outside the scurvy beltway in Washington, that I can accomplish a great deal more by retaining my ability to speak my mind and not be, you know, wrestled, you know, hogtied for
yeah.
all intents and purposes by being a part of that inner circle and cutting
yep.
deals with people that I don't like and who don't have my constituents' best interest at heart. It's just that simple. And when I came out a few years ago and started discussing my experiences in a more public way, first with Noreen Bailovich on her show and then several others subsequently. And I've been back to Noreen several times. I mean, she's got a great show, and I have a very close kinship with her. So she just lets me say it like it is. I don't have to hold back anything. I don't have to edit anything. I just say it, which I'm prone to do anyway, because if I really cared what people thought and what kind of condemnation would rain down on me, then I wouldn't have written the books. Is that open, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, I cannot afford to have anybody else's opinion sway me. But when I came out as an experiencer, and my mother knew well what I had experienced in my life. She'd experienced some of it herself. We had experienced it, some of it together. She said, oh, God, you're never, ever going to make it into Congress now. You'll never be a senator now. They'll just laugh you right up. And I'm like, Mom, if you lay down with dogs, you're inevitably going to get fleas. I don't want to lay down with those dogs. I'll lay down with my dog because she's been treated. But other than that, no. So she has finally, you know, come to terms with this and is aware that I'm in Georgia and people are shooting just because they can. Did you hear that? Oh, my God. We got hunting dogs over here. We got shooting going on behind the house. Oh, my God. Oh, get
Sounds
me
like
out of here.
Sounds like my area.
Oh, God. There are more guns in the state of Georgia than there are people in the state of Georgia. It's a scary place to be. Get me out of here. I'm only up here to get one more load. I have to get my bed and my last dresser, and I'm done with my move. And currently living in Winter Garden, Florida, which is lovely, absolutely lovely. And I enjoy the area very much. And working on getting my mom and my sister down there. They're going to sell this house and come down, and that means five of the seven of us will have finally settled in Florida, which is good. My mom needs that warmth. You know, she really needs that environment. It's good for her. So anyway, that being said,
we need some warmth over here, too. It's May 1st, and my heat is still coming on in the morning and at night. And there's still dead trees out there. They're not fully blossomed yet. And
yeah.
It's like, I feel like it's still wintertime.
Well, yeah, it really sort of is still winter in a lot of places in this country right now. I mean, when I left Florida on, I think I left Florida on Wednesday. And Well, when I left, when I crossed the Florida border, it was 88 degrees. When I got to Villarica, Georgia, it was 58 degrees. And I said, oh, I think I should turn around and just go back. No, I've been having a wonderful, wonderful visit with my mother. And you know, we've lived together for these last 7 years. So this move, this, you know, uprooting and moving, even though I have many and great opportunities in Florida, it's being away from her is very difficult for me because we are just about attached at the hip. So it's really a hard adjustment for me, and it has been for her too. But I come back and forth frequently. I've moved one van load at a time, and that's the best way for me to do it because I have so much stuff accumulated over the course of my lifetime that I have to integrate it slowly. And so it's so far so good. At least my office is set up. You know, that's something.
How are your parents handling, you know, everything that's going on, like with your books and, you know, all the things that you put out, you know, in your books? What do they say about, like, you know, a lot of the stuff that you talked about now?
They're completely, utterly on board. There is no question with either of my parents that it was my destiny to write this story, to tell it the way that I did, to, you know, people who go into the trilogy, if they're linear thinkers, if they think point A to B to C to D, they're a little confused by it because it's written really almost as a conglomeration of historical stories. And from the moment, you know, those of you that have read the books, you know, from the moment we step onto the farm to the moment we leave, it loses some of that chronological quality to it because I wanted the reader, you know, like, the stories, there were so many different kinds of haunting, so many different experiences that we had as a family and individually, that if people look at the whole trilogy at the very beginning of the book and look at how the chapters are broken up, they'll see that the chapters are really the types of hauntings that occurred. So, for instance, Cindy could be 8 years old in one story, but 14 years old in the next story. And I count on the reader's intelligence and their sensitivity and their sensibilities to just dismiss that type of linear thinking and just take it in and just read it because slowly absorb it. Because by the time they get to the end of Volume 3, it all makes perfect sense. And it's really like a lot of different threads that have been weaved together to create one picture, one tapestry.
Right. Have your sisters gotten involved in any in the public or media as far as their experiences?
No. They consider that this is my bag, and I'm the one who invested so much of my time into putting these books out. I'm responsible for virtually every single page, every photograph, every layout, everything that's included, all the quotations, the poetry. You know, it's not what people expect. I think I'm the only author that goes around and says, if you're not ready for this, don't read my books because, you know, otherwise it's not what you expect. You're going to get a whole lot more than just a series of scary stories. If that's what you want, wait for the abridged version to come out. That's what it'll be, a series of scary stories. You know, but if you want the whole spiritual journey that my family went through, then read the trilogy and read it slowly. Absorb it slowly. Consider it a guided meditation. Consider it a lengthy lamentation. But don't think of it as a novel. It's not. It's a memoir, and it's a collective memoir that includes the memories of every single member of my family, and not all of them were easy to extract, believe me. You know, I lived with Christine, my sister Christine, and my mother for the 7 years that I wrote the books. And it took me 3 years to get Christine to sit down and share her recollections because she was still so traumatized that these were things that she didn't ever want to think about again, let alone speak about or see go into print.
Right. Wow. How did your family feel about the town, the way the town reacted to everything? How were they about all that?
Are you talking back in the 70s? Or are you talking about current day?
Oh, both.
Well, in the 70s, it was a completely different time. And there were a lot of people who didn't want to even discuss this subject. This was as just taboo as it could be. And it made them very uncomfortable. It made them squeamish. It just disturbed them. And so I remember being called into the principal's office when I was 15 years old and basically put up against a wall and told by this little man who I could have taken in a heartbeat. I just didn't think it was a good idea. He was the principal, and he said, you will not talk about this anymore. You'll stop lying because you're scaring your fellow students, and their parents are calling my office, and this stops now. And it did. I didn't say another word about it for years. I didn't talk about it, and yet there are hundreds of people that live in Burrowville still who remember very well the stories that we told because we were innocent children, and we were seeing things and experiencing things that we didn't know we shouldn't talk about. And so we did with our new friends. We had just moved to an area, and a lot of the kids that lived around us in that part of town knew a little bit about the history of the house, and they knew that, for instance, when the Kenyans lived there, for all the decades that the Kenyans lived there, there was never a time, ever, when it was dark at night, that every single light in that house was on all night long. It didn't matter if you drove past at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. The house was lit up like a Christmas tree. And we didn't know that until several months after we moved in, and we started hearing from other people that lived in the area, kids that rode the same bus that we did and so on. And, of course, these were new kids to us, and we were trying to make friends. And we'd get on the bus, and, somebody'd say, God, you look so tired. Are you okay? Well, I was kind of up all night because we had this happen and this happen and this happen. And they didn't keep it to themselves. They told their parents. They told other kids. I'll never forget the Easter Sunday that our priest came up to my father and said, Mr. Perrin, I think it's advisable for you to take your family and worship elsewhere. A Catholic priest turned us away from the church. And that was it. We never went back to church as a family.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that The Conjuring completely misrepresented. They represented the Warrens as the devout Roman Catholics, the Christians that were totally embroiled in demonology, which of course has its roots in the Catholic Church, and as the parents, as the godless heathens. And nothing could be further from the truth. My father was destined to become a priest before he met my mother. He was an altar boy his entire life. He was born and raised into the Catholic Church, educated in the Catholic Church, and was an aspiring priest when he met my mother. And that was all she wrote. But my mom converted to Catholicism to marry my father, and every single one of us was born into the church and baptized into the church and confirmed into the church. Every one of us, so to represent us as somehow subject to this kind of spiritual abuse because we were not religiously oriented, spiritually oriented people is a gross miscarriage of justice. That's not the case at all. I understand why they did what they did to try to juxtapose you know, one group against the other. But that's, you know, people are more intelligent than that. And that's one thing that I really loathe about Hollyweird is that they don't give people credit for intelligence. They don't give them credit for, you know, they took a few little tidbits of what Mrs. Warren told them, and they took some tidbits of what I gave them in terms of the truth of what happened, and they wrote their own whole third story that did not in any way resemble what Mrs. Warren experienced at our house or what happened to our family. And the worst miscarriage of justice was twofold against my mother, who would never, ever in a billion years have done anything to hurt any of her children. And to represent her as a possessed murderess or potential murderess was, are you kidding me? And to blame everything on Bathsheba was just so unfair because, you know, there's nowhere, anywhere, other than rumor, innuendo, word of mouth, there's nothing to substantiate Bathsheba sacrificing the baby that died in her care or being a witch or being in cahoots with the devil. You know, this was all the ignorance of the time that just carried on for decades and decades after her death. She died in 1885. We moved to the farm, found the farm in 1970. My mother met the local historian at the time who was in his late 80s and had known Bathsheba when he was a boy. And he, you know, he didn't say that she was a particularly nice person. And he did tell my mother the story of what had been said about her through the course of her lifetime. But there's nothing anywhere to substantiate that she deliberately murdered that baby by impaling a needle in its skull. And the judge at the time who conducted the inquest didn't find anything to substantiate it either, and he dismissed it. But in the court of public opinion, she was tried and convicted and sentenced to a lifetime of misery and a lifetime of scrutiny. And she lost three of her four children by the age of 4 years old. I mean, keep in mind that she lived from 1812 to 1885. In the movie, they had her killing her own child in 1863, she was well beyond childbearing years at that age. You know, they just created a whole third story that bears no resemblance to the truth. Hold on a sec.
Yeah.
Apologies, and please pardon me. I can't help it.
Bless you.
Oh.
Yeah, bless you. But, Were your family kind of believers into that kind of thing before you guys had your experiences in that house? Like,
no.
Were your parents skeptics?
Not at all.
No?
No, not at all. Not at all. None of us had ever had any experience like that.
Yeah.
It was my mother had a very odd experience when she was a very young child, about 6 years old. And I put that into volume 3 because I thought that it was important in terms of bringing the reader full circle about who my mom is and what she was about, and returning, you know, the profound importance of returning to her home in Georgia. In 1980, when we finally sold the farm, it was very upsetting for me to leave that farm behind. It was the only place that I've ever felt was home for me, any place that I've ever lived on this planet. You know, it literally was the only home that I ever had a sense of belonging in.
Right.
And so it was really hard. It fractured our family. It really did. Half of us never wanted to leave the farm, and half of us never wanted to go back.
Did you have a hard time selling it, like, because of the reputation it had?
Well, yeah. It languished on the market without a single call for 6 months. And wow. Then when my mother finally said to my father, I won't survive another winter here, he went to the abutting landowner in Massachusetts, because we had 60 acres of land. Of our land was in Massachusetts, which was lost during the final border war between the Massachusetts Bay Colony and the colony of Rhode Island. So we had, you know, our land was split in half, which meant really nothing more than two tax bills every year. But it was my father who went and spoke with the abutting landowner and cut him a deal for the property. And it was a very sweet deal. But my sister Nancy was so upset that she refused to leave, absolutely refused to leave the house. And even though Cindy had already gone down to our new farm in Georgia with the horses, and when I got home from college, from my college graduation, Nancy was absolutely petulant. And in my parents' absence to come out for my graduation, she had gone and approached the new owners and said, I'll stay on as your caretaker until you're ready to assume the house. Well, they never did live in the house. It was a whole bunch of things happened, which are all detailed in Volume 3. But yeah. Nancy got left behind by her own free will. And stayed in the house for months before she left because of some things that occurred that were very sad and very unfortunate. The wife of the new owners, the wife of the husband and wife that bought the place, she brought her brother in to do some reparations on the house, start to get it back to its original colonial feel, you know, what we hadn't done, they were going to finish, that type of thing. And we heard from neighbor friends months afterwards that he left that house in broad daylight with nothing but the shirt on his back, the clothes on his back. He left his truck, he left his tools, he left his belongings. He had moved into the house and in the middle of the day went screaming out of that house and running down the middle of Round Top Road. And we don't know how that ever resolved. What we were told is that he never went back. I guess somebody else had to go collect his things. He never went back to the house. And for a while, it was, I think she and her husband split. And she lived in the house very briefly with her kids, and then they moved out, and then they rented the house for a while. Nobody stayed particularly long, and then the current owners bought it about 28 years ago.
Wow. I had a really good question to ask. I hate when it slips your mind.
That's okay. It'll come back to you. It will.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, Tim, I know you had some thoughts earlier. You want to throw some stuff in there?
Well, sure. I've been listening. It's very interesting so far, and you guys are really doing a really good job. I'm just sitting, listening, and learning a lot. It's very nice to get an opportunity to speak with you, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure, dear. I appreciate you guys. You know, I mean, you've been very supportive. It's right really from the beginning of all of this. And, you know, we have a lot of friends in common. I feel a very warm, glowy, welcomey thing with you on your show. So it's absolutely my pleasure to be with you. But, yeah, you know, as I told you before, I'll answer any question that you ask me. I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to withhold. I've pretty much put it all out there in the books. There are a few stories that are missing from the books that were my sisters made their own choices about what they wanted included and what they were not willing to disclose. And there were a couple of incidents that happened at the farm that were just so intense and so personal that Cindy and Christine would not disclose them. And I know what happened. But these are things that I guess they're probably going to hold close to the vest for the rest of their lives. I'll be surprised if they share them with anyone outside of our family.
Right.
But most of it is out there. Most of it is. If you read those three books, you'll really have a sense of how it was to live in that house for the decade that we were there.
Right. Will you be, like, more reluctant now to buy a farmhouse yourself? Or, like, now that you've been kind of involved in the paranormal community, you've done some investigating yourself, you're kind of more aware of what's out there now, like, what to kind of expect, right?
I've always been aware. I've always been acutely and keenly aware since early childhood. I mean, I saw my first full-body apparition within 5 minutes of moving into that farmhouse. And my reaction to it was, wow, there is something beyond our death. Now, I mean, that was confirmation for me. What all of us hope for and wish for is that we're not just going to disintegrate and cease to exist at our death. What we hope, and, you know, the foundation of our religions worldwide, is that we go on. And so there I had standing in front of me proof that we go on. So for me, it was a very comforting thing. I never had an altercation with a spirit in that house, not once. I didn't have my first altercation with spirit in that house until decades after we left it. 30 years plus after we left it was the first time that I had ever had something happen to me in that house that actually caused me some kind of physical injury. And it was because whoever it was that was visiting with my father in the cellar at that time did not want me going down there. And so I was just walking through the front hallway, and all of a sudden I got slammed up against the door. And the door that had been open all day, that I had walked in and out of several times, was suddenly, for all intents and purposes, sealed shut. It would not, the handle would not turn, the door would not open. And, you know, it took my breath away. I didn't realize why it had happened until after the fact, when I came back in the house, and my father and my cinematographer, Manny, were standing in the kitchen. And my father was as white as a sheet. And I knew. I said, were you in the cellar? And he said, yeah. And I said, did you? And he said, yeah. And that was it. I mean, I knew that she had come to him again. There was a spirit in our, and there is a spirit in that house that loved my father, absolutely adored my father. And she is probably the same one that loathed my mother, and it wasn't Bathsheba. The one that came to my mother spoke an archaic use of English that was completely out of use by the time Bathsheba was born. And, you know, her threats to my mother that were verbalized came in the form of incantations. So, you know, she hovered over her at dawn one morning with all the other spirits in the house all around the bottom of the bed as though they had been ordered to be there. And no eye contact was made. They just stood there. And this spirit came out of the crowd, and her neck was broken, clearly broken. And Bathsheba did not have a broken neck. She died of paralysis after a stroke in 1885. But this woman clearly had a broken neck, which is why my father has always insisted that the spirit that was harassing my mother was probably Mrs. John Arnold, who was found hanging in the barn when she was 93 years old. She committed suicide on the property, and that was in the 1700s. So it was well before Bathsheba was even born. And Bathsheba was originally a Thayer who somehow intermarried with the Arnolds. We don't have the whole genealogy of the family, but then she, as a young adult, married Judson Sherman. And we don't know if she ever even lived at the farm. We don't know what her attachment was to the farm, if it was familial or what it was. You know, but you can see how all of this, you know, is so much more complicated and became so convoluted in The Conjuring that she copped the blame for everything. you know, I can't tell you. I will spend the rest of my life answering questions about The Conjuring. And that is a double-edged sword because it gives me an opportunity to tell the truth of what actually happened and dispel the, you know, the fictitious nature of the film, but to also say what they got right. And, you know, what they got right was important. Good conquers evil. Love conquers fear. The Perrin family had an extreme haunting that they all survived and went on to thrive as a family in spite of it. Now, that's all true. You know, the in the grand sweeping strokes of things, that's all correct. And there were so many little cosmic kisses in that movie, things that they got included in that film that they could not possibly have known about. Out of 25,000 different wallpaper patterns that were considered colonial or early American, they chose the one wallpaper pattern that we had in the house. They never saw any photographs of the inside of the house. The set designer, the art director, they never saw any photographs from the inside of the house. And yet they chose the exact same wallpaper pattern. When I was 13 years old, I was turning 13, and my mom's friend, Fran Cederback, liked to go flea marketing. And so we all loaded up in her van and went to a local flea market in Foster, Rhode Island, which is the next town over from where we lived. And I came across, it could have been a paint-by-number for all I knew, but it was a picture of a it was a folk art drawing of a white cat, and it was 50 cents. I didn't have 50 cents, and my mother didn't have 50 cents to spend on me that day, but Fran bought that picture for me and gave it to me for my birthday, and it's still hanging in my bedroom. Well, no, I've moved it to my office now, but when I'm watching The Conjuring for the first time and the camera comes around into Shanley Caswell's bedroom, who played me in the movie, there's the picture of the cat sitting up on her mantle board in the movie. They had no idea I had that picture. Absolutely no idea. I had never put that out in public anywhere. I had never discussed that story. It wasn't anywhere in the books. You know, that was, it was, you know, just a little kiss, like saying, it's okay, it's okay. This was the best way to get at least the foundation of your story out into the world. Nothing could have done a better job of it than a major motion picture. And so
I just want to take a moment to say that I totally get, like, what you're doing, and you know, I really appreciate how, you know, when Hollywood, like, does these movies and, you know, they're not really all the truth. You know, a lot of things are left out, and, you know, whether it's just watering them down or, you know, they do it, you know, whatever editing reasons and production reasons that they have. But, you know, you're going around telling your side of the story and stuff, and I just think that's cool, and, you know, I really respect what you're doing, and you're going about it like in a real positive light, and you know, I think that's why you just have such a big following right now, and because a lot of people do appreciate that, and you know, you're making a big contribution to the paranormal community by you doing that.
Thank you. I really hope so, and I hope that people understand that, you know, really in the final analysis, there's nothing to fear. You know, it was there were times that my mother was under physical attack in that house, whoever it was, whatever spirit it was that perceived herself to be the mistress of the house, she said so. She got in my mother's face, and she said so. 'Twas mistress once afore ye came, and mistress here will be anon. We'll drive ye out with fiery broom. We'll drive ye mad with death and gloom. I mean, she didn't pull any punches. She told her, get out. Get out, but leave your kids and your husband behind. I want them. I want you to leave.
Yeah.
No, and sorry, that wasn't going to float. When, you know, one thing that, I mean, there was no possession of my mother. My mother was attacked, and it happened not in the cellar. It happened in our dining room. And it happened during a seance that Ed and Lorraine Warren foisted upon my parents, telling them that it was absolutely critical that this be done. And they introduced a medium and a priest into the mix that created havoc in that house, what I consider an act of spiritual malpractice. You don't kick open wide the doors to the netherworld and conjure spirits to present themselves when you don't know who you're inviting in. No, it was absolutely irresponsible on her part. And whatever it was that came in was pure, unadulterated evil, and it was not of this world. It spoke a language that does not exist on this planet. I don't know what it was. I can't tell you it was a demon. I don't know what a demon is. I've never seen a demon. I can tell you that it was evil, and that it warped and twisted my mother's body into a knot and then lifted her and the chair she was in up off the floor and heaved her in a fraction of a second from one room into another, and I heard her skull crash to the floor and thought I saw my mother die that night. It was as traumatizing an event has ever occurred in my life. I will not have anything to do with the dark arts. I avoid people who are involved with them like the plague, because they don't know what they're doing. And if they do know what they're doing, I have to ask them why they're doing it. Now, it's enough to know that evil exists. I deliberately choose to live in the light because I have seen the dark side of existence. My mother was not possessed. My mother was attacked. There was no exorcism in our house. Ed Warren had far too much respect for the church and for the priests who trained him as a demonologist who could assist, if need be, with an exorcism. He would never have conducted one on his own. That's not who he was. That's not what the man was made of. And it would have been, to him, it would have been an act of blasphemy for him to step into the role of a priest, to take that, you know, to step into the role of an exorcist, which is a whole different level of priest. He wouldn't have done it. This was, The Conjuring came from, The Conjuring was conjured in the minds of two screenwriters.
Right.
And that's the truth. And when they did try to incorporate more of the truth into the screenplay, bless their hearts, both of them, Chad and Carrie Hayes, as two nicer men you'd never meet, twin brothers, just wonderful, wonderful human beings. And, they wanted to tell more of the truth. They wanted it to be more authentic to the story. And when they took the screenplay over and over again to New Line Cinema and Warner Brothers executives, they were told to take it back and tone it down. Take it back and tone it down. Tone it down some more. Tone it down some more. Over and over, 7 times, they sent that script back before anybody was allowed to pick up a camera. They took all the truth that they could out of it because they thought that it would literally run people out of theaters and would be completely counterproductive to their objective, which was to fill theater seats. You know, so that's really the truth of it. You know, I can't be more blatant than that. They took our story and they warped and twisted it into something that they thought would be socially acceptable and palatable to an audience and that would get a PG-13 rating. I was with James Wan when the MPAA Rating Commission came down with an R, and the man had to be peeled off the ceiling of the building we were in. He was so upset because if you've seen the film, you know there's no gratuitous violence, there's no sex, there's no bad language to speak of. It is a very toned down, tamed down version of events. And because they knew how toned down it was, including James, they figured they'd get their PG rating, and they didn't. And he demanded immediately to know how come, why. He wanted immediate answer, why. and they got an immediate answer. An executive called on his behalf. We were at WonderCon doing a presentation together at the time, and the answer came back, it's just too scary.
Wow. How many spirits total do you think, you know, did you guys come up with, like, an actual number, like, towards the end of, you know, everything? Like, did Lorraine or anybody feel that there was, like, more, like, obviously there were more than one, but did you feel, like, how many there were?
There were at least a dozen spirits actively in that house. Some of them we only saw once or twice. Some of them we saw so frequently. Oh, excuse me. It was like they were members of the family. And everything in between. We had spirits that never acknowledged us. We would see them, but they would never look at us, never made any eye contact. And then we had spirits that were in hot pursuit of contact with us. And that was the hardest thing to explain, especially when my mother got stabbed in the leg with a needle, when she passed out in the garden and woke up with a tomato steak impaled in the side of her hip, that was very bad. That could have killed her. It was very bad. You know, there were a number of incidents, but my mother is the one that took the brunt of the physical assault in the house.
Wow.
My sister Cindy is the one who had the most contact. Cindy was the one that they went after.
Right.
Because she had, for all intents and purposes, she had died when she was 2 months old and was brought back. And she came back a very old, wise soul. And I think that in some respect, they claimed that little girl as their own. And, in fact, the spirit that had come after my mother repeatedly, the one with the broken neck, approached Cindy as well when she was just a wee bit of a thing. She was only about 8 or 9 years old, tops. And she outstretched her arms, and again, there were no hands at the end of her arms. It looked like rendered bone that was just protruding out of the ends of her dress. Out of the sleeves of her dress. She had no feet. She was floating. And she leaned down, and my sister Cindy was playing on her bedroom floor. And she looked up, and here is this apparition right in front of her saying, come to me, little girl, come with me.
Mm. Wow. I can't imagine, you know, like being at that age, you know, what your mind goes through, what you know, what you're thinking at that time when you're experiencing, you know, stuff like that. It's just, I don't know. I never had those experiences at that age, but, you know, I had them, like, maybe when I was a little older.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just, there's no words, you know, like, how you feel and, you know, what you're thinking. And but, you know, that's why, you know, you wrote your books and you have everybody's, you know, experiences in there the way you want them to. And I don't know. Well, we are getting down to the wire with our interview time here. But, Andrea, is there anything that you wish to tell our audience? Is there any projects or events that are coming up that you'd like to share with us?
I have so many irons in the fire, it's ridiculous.
You're everywhere.
It's just beyond the pale. I will say that I will be at the Ocean State Paracon in Harrisville, Rhode Island, my old hometown, on July 18th and 19th. And I invite everybody to come out. It's $5 a head at the door. I mean, they couldn't make it any cheaper unless they made it free. And all the proceeds benefit the Wounded Warrior Project, which is just a great organization. We're thrilled to be a part of that. And George is going to MC the event. And I'm just going to be up there chatting it up with all my friends from high school. All my teachers show up to see me. My old English teacher, he came into one of my events when I was up in Harrisville a couple of years ago, and he just stood with his arms crossed at the back of the auditorium, and I said, oh, my God, look who it is. And he said, I always knew you'd be a famous writer. Yeah, he's a hoot. But anyway, I digress. I have people just follow me on Facebook, find my author page, find A World Awakening, my show, find my personal page. I'm all over social media. It's easy to find me. And just follow me, and all my upcoming events will be well posted. And everything will be out there, and I'm just thrilled to meet my followers, my readers. I consider every one of them my friends, you know, to make the investment of time and energy that they do in becoming part of our story. I appreciate it very much, and I thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, no, we appreciate it also. And like I said, you know, I really admire, you know, your contributions, and, you know, and I wish, you know, you nothing but the best of luck, you know, with what your goals are, what your mission is, and I hope, you know, you get to what you really want to accomplish and achieve with everything that you're doing. And you know, just thank you again, and you know, I hope we can continue our friendship, and who knows, maybe we'll meet in person one day at one of these events.
I feel certain of it, sweetheart. I do. I feel certain of it. Absolutely. I look forward to that time.
Yeah, definitely. Tim, anything else to add before we hang up on Andrea?
No, I just want to say I appreciate you coming on. Several questions from people were coming in through text, you know, ask this. But just through the conversation, you were covering everything that people were asking. So it was nice just to kind of be quiet and listen. It was enjoyable, and I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope you both have a lovely evening, and go close out your show. I'll say goodnight to you and to all of your listeners, and I look forward to meeting you soon.
Yeah, take care of yourself, and we'll be in touch.
Okay, thanks so much. Right. Good night.
Take care. Bye.
Okay, bye.
You
bet.
That was Andrea Perone, everybody. I hope everybody enjoyed her on our show tonight. I know I did. You know, she's been a great friend aside from being a guest on her show. I suggest you do follow her on Facebook, and you just you can get more information, you know, what she's up to and her projects and events and things like that through that way. So that's what I recommend you do. And you can also follow us on Facebook as well, right, Tim?
Absolutely. And feel free to give us feedback.
Yeah.
Which we love.
We love feedback. Don't feel intimidated whatsoever. We're not going to beat you up. We're not bullies.
Oh, no.
No. But it was a good show. You know, she did cover a lot. You know, didn't really have to ask too much because she covered a lot of things. But we did get into a lot more than what we did on our last interview, which I, you know, totally appreciate of her. You know, we did get into a lot more stuff that we couldn't before. And, you know, she really gets in depth, you know, aside from, you know, what's in her book. But, you know, I recommend getting her books. I mean, if you guys want to really, you know, get the dirt sheet, you know, from what really happened, you know, from her experiences and her family's experiences, you know, there's volume 1, 2, and 3. And, you know, I put the link on our Facebook page. And that's another reason why I suggest everybody, you know, like us on our Facebook, because I put a lot of available information from our guests and our upcoming guests on Facebook. Social networking is a wonderful thing.
It is. And, you know, trying to sum up 10 years or the length of time she was at that residence and everything that happened, you know, I was thinking when she was talking about the movie and the adjustments of the movie, I would imagine trying to capture something that long and that much activity and, you know, in the limited time that they have must have been just aggravating, and to talk about it, you know, in the short time we have. I mean, you couldn't ask enough questions, you know, because it's very interesting. But, like, you know, like I said, most of the questions I got were answered just through normal conversation. Probably questions she probably has to answer 100 times a day. You know, the most popular one that I was getting was, you know, what was the relationship to the movie and real life? And she handled that, you know, obviously. you know, very watered down, very skewed, to get the, you know, to get the rating, and it was too scary, you know, so they adjusted. I'm sure that they adjusted it to fit, you know, their target audience. But I like, you know, the whole, the book thing is, I think, the way to go. That would be the way to get the story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I like having her on. And, you know, like I said, you know, TV embellishes, and we really don't know what goes on behind the scenes in production. You know, like you say, you know, how much time they have to edit, and, you know, what their budget is, and, you know, depending on the rating and what rating they have to give it, you know, like Andrea said, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but,
Yeah,
I definitely recommend her books. I know my mother-in-law is a real fan of her writing and her books. She has, I believe, all three of them. And my wife also reads it, and she's a big fan. And, you know, once again, you know, she's a great author, and appreciate her being a guest on our show. She's everywhere, so I'm just very thankful for her to be in our realm. So, well, with that said, I don't know, we have, I think next week we have a great guest. His name is Kevin Williams. He's a world-renowned near-death experience researcher, and he also has his own book out about near-death experiences, and he's got a website dedicated about the near-death experience research that he's done, and a whole bunch of other doctors and scientists and a whole bunch of, you know, other, you know, related researchers that are on there that put together a lot of information regarding near-death experience research, which is a really interesting topic. You ever see the movie Flatliners, Tim?
Yeah, was that Kevin Bacon? Or am I thinking of another one?
Yeah, Flatliners. Kevin Bacon, Kiefer Sutherland, Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
I think Oliver Platt was in it. Yeah, they were a bunch of young doctors, you know, going to college for their PhD, and you know, during their, you know, courses and stuff, they were into you know, trying to like cool the body down to the point where it would actually pass over, and, you know, trying to get the person back after, you know, passing over, and see if they can remember any of their experiences after coming back. And I it was a really cool movie. I thought it was a great concept. Did you?
Yeah, you know, oof, the brain stuff is just amazing. It's going to be a really good interview, really good opportunity to learn. I'm fascinated by the brain. I love the things that happen and the potentials that can happen. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm not going to be here, remember, Tim, next week.
Mm-hmm.
I got an investigation again. I'm trying to take advantage of when I still have my Friday nights to me, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes scheduling investigations are difficult when, you know, family events can interfere with, you know, what you love to do. And, of course, family comes first. So it's kind of hard to, you know, juggle the schedule around. And so, fortunately, sometimes we have to schedule them on a Friday night. Tim's got the helms next Friday night.
I should be able to not crash anything.
Hopefully he won't break the chat room that week.
I will break the chat room.
So I'm sure, Tim, you'll probably get, you know, another co-host, guest co-host to come on to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows, maybe it'll be Kenny Bill. Maybe we'll ask Bill Hyland. We want to, you know, thank everybody in the chat room. Ginny, thank you for listening tonight, being in the chat room. And, you know, Bill, again, thanks. And my wife is always in the background supporting me and helping me out. But, yeah, so I don't know. That's it. Any more thing to add, Tim, before I hang up on everybody?
I'll just have a great weekend. Be safe.
Yeah, have a great weekend, guys, and enjoy. All right, take care. Until the next time.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. We broadcast live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. don't be intimidated by the hosts. We would love to get your feedback about our show, whether it is good or bad. You can leave comments on our Blog Talk webpage or email us privately at paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Would you like to interact with other listeners or the host during the show? Register free with Blog Talk Radio to chat with us live during the show. You can also look us up on Facebook, answer questions and polls, and get the latest news. Until next time, see you on the other side.